Hello guys, Jack here from Jack Makes Happy Hour podcast, and yes, the rumours are true, we're heading back out on tour in May 2024. 68% of the tickets are already sold out, but there are still a few left at Edinburgh, Newcastle, Manchester, Birmingham, Leeds, Cardiff, Sheffield, Nottingham, Bristol, Bury and our home city of Norwich. So, don't waste any time, grab your tickets today and come and watch me, Alfie and Robbie live.
And me.
Mainly me, Alfie and Robbie, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
HappyHourLive.co.uk. See you in May.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
I was, and I hate this word, and so does everyone, an influencer. I built up a huge audience on Twitter, and I picked the wrong platform because basically impossible to monetize.
Yeah.
But I quickly realized people I was working with, and also brands, they weren't getting the best out of influencer marketing. Brands heard that influencer marketing was going great, so they were chucking a load of money at people who didn't have the correct audience.
Yeah.
But quickly, when people started to come in and manage it, and when influencers realised, and brands as well, that they weren't getting the best deal, I thought I'd just slip into that gap and offer that as a service.
Fame MMA. Now, that's an event that happened in December in Newcastle, I believe, around about that time. And it turned out to be a bit of a shit show.
Yeah.
And you had a bit of an involvement in that.
I start getting messages from people saying, you're a fraud, you need to quit the industry, get out.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
So you offered me the fight with Kavos, and obviously Will Any was up for it as well. Was Will Any up for it or not?
No, he said that if he bleeds, he passes out, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
So, Kavos just punched himself in the face a couple of times and win by knockout.
I'm going to pretend that Christian's just signed you, Stevie White.
That means he needs to know anything about me.
No. He knows enough about you from the podcast. Say you came into a... So you've now walked into this room,
yeah,
and you're trying to get a brand deal,
yeah,
for Stevie White.
Popcorn. I think that people like you, Stephen Trice, Chi with a C, could write a sitcom and have it on a platform and people will love it.
Wow.
My goal one day is to get somebody a sitcom.
Yeah, you can get me one, mate. I'll tell you my whole idea right now. Episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 4, all the characters.
I know you're writing
all one. All the subplots. Jack Makes Happy Hour. Hello guys, and welcome back to Jack Makes Happy Hour. We're still in the middle. Well, it's not the middle, it's still the start of season 4, many would say.
Yeah.
Well, we differentiate the seasons
based on you no longer recording for a bit. Normally, this one will allow because it was a pandemic.
Yeah.
But all the other times, it's been like, oh, can't be arsed for about 3 weeks, and then you're like, oh, we've had a bit of a break. Season 2.
But what I'm doing now, because you remember that first episode at the start of the year when we was with Jordan and I said about how I'm only allowed 2 hiccups in the year.
Yeah.
I will actually let the audience know that the pandemic can count as one. If they want to take the fucking point,
so
they can have
it. So that was your hiccup?
Yeah.
So
I'm not going to... I don't want to have another hiccup this year because I hadn't missed an upload date until the pandemic and then I didn't like doing them remotely.
So as long as we stay as we are now...
I'm allowed one more hiccup.
You're allowed... No, I don't think you should be allowed any because really, when you boil down the seasons, the real change isn't you not being asked, it's you getting rid of a co-host.
Right.
Yeah. So season 5 is when I'm out the door.
That's why you don't want me to have any hiccups. No. Just go straight through.
Yeah, just keep going, Jack.
Yeah. Right, now we are joined today by a very interesting guest. We're joined by a talent manager, some would say, director of Colossal influence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it's Christian Sturt.
Thank you.
So many people say Stuart, don't they?
Yeah, and Christian with a C. And my parents didn't like me from birth. Every phone call, it's like, yeah, that's Christian with a K. No, not Stuart. No.
So then they call you Christian K. Yeah. Well, explain to, because you're a man that's behind the scenes a lot. Mm-hmm. You do have a YouTube channel, but mm-hmm. predominantly your work is behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who doesn't know who you are or what you do, how do you brand yourself?
Okay, so I was, and I hate this word, and so does everyone, an influencer. Mm. I built up a huge audience on Twitter across a bunch of different accounts back in 2012, 2013.
Right.
When it was much easier to grow on there. So I built a network of about 1.5 million followers across various different accounts.
Fucking hell.
And I picked the wrong platform because basically impossible to monetize.
Yeah.
I should have gone YouTube, even Instagram. But I quickly realized that I was working with a lot of people. Most of them were much younger. So I'm 33.
Right.
People I was working with. And also brands, they weren't getting the best out of influencer marketing. And I think if you speak to probably anyone in influencer marketing at that point, there was a real problem where the field might have never taken off because brands heard that influencer marketing was going great. So they were chucking a load of money at people who didn't have the correct audience.
Yeah.
They didn't have the correct engagement. They were just chucking money at a field that they heard was doing good things.
Right.
And it really caused a bit of a, for want of a better word, pandemic at the start, yeah. where it almost didn't recover. But quickly, when people started to come in and manage it, and when influencers realized, and brands as well, that they weren't getting the best deal, I thought I'd just slip into that gap and offer that as a service.
Right. So predominantly now it's talent management, is it?
Yeah. I still do a lot of influencer briefs, and I think that's probably where I differ for some other agencies. So yesterday we were doing a campaign for a dating app, which I won't name because they didn't pay for that. And the creator sent me a brief and the brand didn't like it. So I said, let's do this. And they liked it. So we went with that. So I will input a lot into it. Basically, because I've done it for some time now, I can see it from a second set of eyes, yeah. second perspective, whereas a lot of talent managers will just solely be on negotiation and then contracts and then get doing that sort of stuff.
So you like the creative side of it as well?
I do love the creative side of it. Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned, we want to get to your meal deal. That's what we're going to do. But you did mention that you amassed a huge following online. Mm-hmm. What year was that? Well, roughly.
It was between 2012 and 2015.
Right. And that was on Twitter, as you say. Yeah. What were you doing?
So I was a journalist.
Okay.
I was a football writer, hence the account Footy Writer.
creative name. Yeah. I can see you like the creative.
Even back in 2012, I couldn't get any name. It's like football writer's too long. Mm. So I went with Footy Writer, and then I realized that it was so easy to develop accounts, even if they didn't have any synergy. So I developed an account called WATN Celebrity, which has 360,000+.
What was that doing?
It's Where Are They Now Celebrity. So it looks at people that you might have known in the 80s, 90s and noughties.
Right.
And see what they're doing now.
Isn't it like that guy on YouTube who does that? Like,
yeah. I did that before him.
But he now focuses, who am I thinking? The guy that does the dead, like, does,
is his name Michael Masden or something?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's controversial. Someone will die and he'll release a video on them that evening or, you know, the day after. So click, like J Station.
Yeah, clickbait and monetize their name. Right. So fair enough. So you were footy right and you had all these followers, and then because you was in that space, mm-hmm. is that when you took an interest in YouTube and YouTubers, or have you always been a fan?
No, I've always been a fan. I've been watching YouTube since its inception, really. I've watched your content from the very start, like 8 years ago.
Wow.
I've been watching loads of people.
Really?
I've seen the come up of a lot of people as well, and that's really helped with me talent identification, trying to see who's going to be next to break into the space and stuff. So
right.
I didn't have high hopes, to be honest.
I didn't either, so don't worry about that. We'll get on to this in a bit, but you manage, you've got a whole roster now at your company, Colossal Influence, Kavos being one of them.
Yes.
So he's an interesting character, especially in the space. Never had him in this space, but we'll be open to that idea, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
I think he'd do it.
Yeah, do you think? Yeah.
To be fair, we've never really said anything about him on here.
No.
As long as Alex isn't in the room,
we'll get on to Cavus. We will. Yeah. We will. Cavus not. Alex not a fan. I took the piss out of his name once.
It is a shit name.
Well, we'll ask him. We'll ask him later. We're going to be talking about MCNs and understanding a bit of that. You're in a very similar line of work to Harry Hugo, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I would say he was more sort of. I don't know, he owns an influencer marketing agency, whereas mine's a talent agency.
Right.
So he doesn't actually have any talent on his books.
Yeah.
Whereas I have quite a few people that we work with exclusively.
Right.
But then I also offer a consultancy as well to brands when there's a brief that doesn't fit like the 8 or 9 people that we're working with at the
right.
time.
Fair enough. And another reason why you're on, perhaps the main reason this come about, is Fame MMA. Mm. Now, that's an event that happened in December in Newcastle, I believe, around about that time. And it turned out to be a bit of a shit show.
Yeah.
And you had a bit of an involvement in that.
Mm-hmm.
Not the downfall of it, mm-hmm. but we'll get to that later on in the show and we'll talk about it, because we've known each other for a long time now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've spoken for a long time. And it was just a bit of an interesting one. You invited me to actually fight on mm-hmm. the card. So I thought it'd be fun to get you on, to chat about it, and also a bit of a platform to get your side of the story out.
That's
so
right.
It's going to be a bit beefy. But Christian, let's jump into the happy hour question of the day. Every day. what is your go-to meal, Dale?
Oh, this is going to be controversial, isn't it? it's a BLT.
Mm.
Cool Ranch Doritos.
Ooh.
And
you're on for a good one, actually.
Probably a Coke or a water or lemonade. Whatever.
It's not bad. I am going to actually ask for one drink, though, if you have to pick one.
Okay, I go for lemonade
for a Sprite.
I like a Sprite.
I don't mind that as a whole. So BLT is what? Bacon
lettuce, tomato. Clues and title, go on.
Oh, bacon lettuce. Bacon lettuce, tomato.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
what did you think a BLT was? You're thinking of like the BMT at McDonald's, aren't you?
At McDonald's,
yeah, the bacon mayo chicken.
I'd be
MT. I've just told you.
No, it,
BMC.
BMT for chicken.
Bacon mayo. Oh, yeah, BMC. Fuck.
Wait, you're still getting it wrong.
No, BMC.
It's a
bacon mayo chicken.
They don't narrow it down, do they? They just call it the mayo chicken with bacon.
Nah, they called it the BMC
Hold
for
on a
while.
Second. Let's have a look at this.
It's not a BMC.
BMC! Bacon mayo chicken.
I mean, he's shouting shit. Absolute
nah,
shit.
Definitely. Fiona, get that up there.
No,
search BMC. Fiona, bacon mayo chicken at
Fiona, I used to order these. Do you know what I mean, Fee? But it wasn't a BMC. It was a bit. Can't remember.
BMC, bacon mayo chicken.
No, it's not a BMT, but that's a big meaty treat from Subway.
It is BMC McDonald's. Put McDonald's after it.
CBO. Oh, God. We've got a bloody business owner here, a guy that
maybe I've got it wrong.
And we're talking about the fucking you fucked that big time, Stevie. So Fiona's frantically trying to Google it, and she can't seem to find it. Fee, don't worry about it. We've got a show to do.
Business model.
This is the most important part.
Right. So Christian, who's on your roster? Who are you looking after at the moment?
Okay. So we've got Kavos.
Yeah.
We have Sersha, who's an Instagram influencer. We have Sun, who's a gamer. We have Simon Miller, who's a wrestler slash gamer. We have Top Hat Gaming Man, who's a gamer slash wrestler. We have... Oh, here we go. Here comes the memory test.
This is where you leave someone out.
Yeah, I know. And they go, no, I'm not working with you anymore. We've just signed Jordan Teresa, who is a... She's a commentator.
Right.
She's just past 100,000 and she's doing really good numbers at the moment.
Okay.
She's really exciting, but she does more social and political commentary rather than
YouTube
drama.
What do you look for when you sign somebody to a roster?
Talent predominantly. Yeah. So with Kavos, and I know we'll get onto him, and I know there's differing schools of thought on Kavos, but he is potentially, out of all the time that I've worked on YouTube, one of the hardest working YouTubers.
Right.
His scripting and he self-edits as well. he puts hours and hours and hours into each script that he writes.
Right.
He meticulously checks it and he goes over it. His work ethic is sort of unparalleled to a lot of people.
Mm.
But talent engagement is huge, obviously. If you've got 10,000 followers and you're doing 400 likes on Instagram, then there's an issue, because that's like a very small engagement.
Mm.
But we were looking for creators of a certain size. Now, we've actually started to scale down a little bit, because there is a gap in YouTube when creators go from sort of 80 to 100,000. A lot of creators talk about the 100,000 being the hardest target to hit, and that the 100,000 to a million is actually much easier.
Mm.
And so we're targeting sort of creators around the 70, 80, 90,000 mark now as well.
Right.
We're expanding. So we've gone from 7 creators and we're looking to go to 11 or 12.
Mm. Is this a company you made?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is probably a bit boring to everyone, but in 2008, I was working in a bank.
Mm.
I was bored, but I wanted to write football content. Mm. So I came out and wrote football content for a living, but I had to work under a company. So I called the company Colossal Content. Colossal as in big, and then just kind of imagery into the mind. And in 2014, we found that we were doing more influencer work than content work. So we switched the name finally in 2016. So it transitioned over to Colossal Influence.
Oh, fair enough. Now, I think with the array of talent that you mentioned, the one that our audience will probably be most interested in is the one we've alluded to and mentioned a few times already, Kavos. Interesting character.
Yeah.
Splits opinion quite a lot online.
Yeah.
More so in the negative than the good. How did you come to chat to Kavos, and what was it about him that made you go, yeah, he's good enough for me?
We were talking about fame.
Right.
Unsurprisingly, as we'll get to, I probably spoke to 200-300 people about fame.
Mm.
And which was actually part of my downfall. But we kept on speaking, and he was talking about, well, we actually pitched him to fight you, Will, or Alex.
Right.
Alex was never really an option because he's too small, and he's quite tall, Kavos, so he's about your size.
So what Christian's saying there, Alex, is that you're an absolute fucking pussy.
I didn't say that. although
that's the vibe I got.
You'll be fighting him next year, won't you?
Yeah, no, it's too big.
Right. So yeah, you did, because you messaged, you WhatsApped me, I think it was October time, something like that, and asked me if I'd consider fighting Kavos in the octagon is what they call it. No from me.
Yeah. What made you say no?
It was a combination of things, right? So it was mainly that I'm a fun pussy.
good start,
number two, I've got metal plates in my jaw.
Mm. Yeah, probably not the safest thing to do.
Number three, if I lost to Kavos,
you'd never hear the end.
I'm not sure I'd ever live it down.
Yeah.
I certainly don't know if I'll have a place on YouTube anymore. And number four, because I'd heard on the grapevine that the event might not be great.
Mm-hmm.
Not for anything to do with your involvement, but there was people saying certain things behind the scenes, which we will get to. Mm-hmm. We will get to. So you offered me the fight with Kavos, and obviously Will and E was up for it. Was Will and E up for it or not?
No, he said that if he bleeds, he passes out, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Kavos just punched himself in the face a couple of times and win by knockout. But yeah, we couldn't get anyone to fight with him. Kavos only really wanted to fight a select few people that he'd had previous, not issues with. Certainly you were bottom of the list, then Alex was top of it,
right,
and Will was somewhere in the middle.
He wanted to go into that with anger then,
yeah,
rather than just an event.
Well, you do need to fight somebody that you have a genuine, not, you don't need to hate them, but you do need to have a reason to want to punch someone in the head.
Mm.
I'd fight you.
Not properly, you wouldn't though, and I know you wouldn't, because me and Alfie have sparred, right?
Yeah,
and
you pull out.
And I know for a fact that obviously there's a difference in height and weight, and that's mental that we'd even spar, but we have sparred and we've said, right, we'll just go for it this time, and you don't.
Yeah.
You don't. Even when you've been bopped on the nose and you feel a bit shunned by it, you can't. I couldn't, as much as I joke about it. Like, I could kill you, but I couldn't hit you.
That's nice. I'm taking that.
Do you know what I mean?
That's the one compliment I'll give him, if it counts.
So Kavos was up for any of them, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you got chatting to him.
Yeah, yeah. I think we might have spoken a couple of years before about a brand brief or something, but
right.
Tend to find that I've communicated with a lot of people from time ago.
Right, fair enough. And now he's officially signed.
Mm-hmm.
He's there. You just spoke very highly of his work ethic. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the content?
I like any creator, don't agree with everything he says. So there will always be bits that I don't agree with what he says. But that's part and parcel of working with anybody.
Mm.
They're always going to have content out there that's controversial. The one thing I will say about Kavos is that he has done a plethora of research on what he's doing. So what he's presenting, he believes in.
Mm.
Now, I think the divide has come that he's willing to hit people who are in the commentary community that stray away from going for others in the commentary community because things can get uncomfortable.
Mm.
So if somebody pulls something and Kavos has seen it and he thinks, I want to pull them up on that, or I'm going to pull them up on that, it doesn't matter what your previous relationship with him is. Mm. There is none of that loyalty. By his own admission, he has no friends in the YouTube scene. He has his friends and then he has YouTube. Mm. So when Deji did some stuff, he had praised Deji in a video before and then he made an expose on him. There was no loyalty to him there. And I think that sort of cutthroat nature is why a lot of people don't agree with him.
Mm.
Some say it's the most honest thing that you can do. You know, if someone does something, then pull them up on it.
Mm.
But also I think that a lot of the commentary community, and I wouldn't put you in it, a lot of the commentary community have moved away from going after the individual and are now starting to do stuff like 90 Day Fiance, where they critique people that they're never going to meet who are on TV in a different world to them. And it's got quite safe. I think Kavos, who's still quite young, still 22, is still developing the content that other people were creating before.
Yeah.
And is enjoying it, but not in like a cynical, he's never been I've seen this screw up, I'm going to target it. He needs to have a basis for a video.
But I think you're bang on there. And a lot of things that you said about him, you could 100% relate to me 2-3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
maybe a bit longer, 3-4 years ago, whatever. So I'm not going to sit here on a pedestal and go, oh, Kavos is the big bad wolf. Let's mm-hmm. point fingers at him. I disagree with a lot of stuff he says.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, I have a negative opinion of him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure if I met him, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
And so I'm not here to slag him out. This isn't a cancel Kavos podcast. But what was you said something. I've lost my train of thought now. Hang on. You said, we'll do a pause there. You said something because I wanted to pick up on it. It was something about Kavos. What did you say? What was your last thought? You said,
was it that?
Oh, right. Hang on. So it was, but only the only things that I've seen from him where he's mentioned me negatively
mm-hmm.
is like, oh, he's sucking True Geordie's ass like the rest of them. It's like, it's really confusing because when he does a video about Ellen or does a video even about mm-hmm. True Geordie,
mm-hmm.
now I'm good mates with Brian, of course I am, but I think a lot of the things he said in that video, I was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I can't argue with it. I pride myself on being quite an honest creator, but then why does he need the little backhanded comments just to kind of like, I feel like he's doing what I did years ago
mm-hmm.
and I learned and I grew from it,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not trying to be patronising to him at all. Mm-hmm. I know he's a lot younger, and maybe he'll go on a similar thing to me. I used to just go like, right, I'm going to be the anti-YouTuber.
Yeah.
That guy's a cunt, that guy's a cunt, that guy's a cunt. And it doesn't really get you anywhere when you have such good points and you have the ability, like he does, to easily destruct mm-hmm. YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
Deconstruct YouTubers
yeah, yeah.
in a way that I can do as well. And then I learned to focus my energy on the ones that actually truly need to be deconstructed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think he's in that 2016 Jackmate phase of he's a cunt. I'll call everyone a cunt, and then anyone who doesn't like YouTube will come to me, and I'll get that pool of people. So why does he like off the quip, like just off the cuff, just like insult randomers that don't seem to have done much?
I think a lot of it has a backstory. I think more than you think has a backstory. A lot of people have taken an issue with him. A lot of people have DM'd him. There is certainly an element of jumping on a trend, but I think that's YouTube. And I think the backhanders are probably a bit more satirical than if you're caught up in it and you don't you're not seeing the reasoning behind it. It's not funny because you're part of it. But if you're, as Ricky Gervais says, and we all love Ricky Gervais, you know, you don't pander to the 200 people in the room. You to the greater audience. And I think I've said that to you before as well, actually. And he's very much got that anti-YouTuber mentality while still, you know, being a YouTuber. And there is definitely a line there where you have to play fast and loose with some of the rules. And oftentimes he will jump that line a little bit. But I never think he's particularly malicious in the things that he says. He, as I say, he believes the things that he says. And that to him is the most important thing, definitely.
Do you see any similarities between his content and mine?
Not anymore, but definitely in previous years.
Yeah.
I think a lot of commentary YouTubers have... I wouldn't call you a commentary YouTuber anymore for a start, but certainly people like Alex has definitely strayed away from his original... You would target one person and then go for them. And now it's very much a sort of PG scale back version. It's like a... you know, as I say, you're never going to meet this person, so there's going to be no real world repercussions, whereas Kavos doesn't have that. He hasn't got to that point, or he doesn't plan on getting to that point. He's very cutthroat, and he is confrontational. And that's what, you know, the content he creates.
As you look after, you obviously look after him and his channel, how brandable is he? How marketable? Can you sell ads on him?
You can. It is tough. You certainly have to find the right demographics. He has quite a big US audience, which means that we have to pitch to American brands quite often, but he is doing work with a bunch of brands at the moment. I've got him a string. They sort of all came in at one, and he's enjoying it, and that content suits that brand. But he's not as easy to sell, as it were, as a beauty influencer who's PG, who just talks about makeup. Which is fine. It comes with its own challenges, but also it's exciting to me because that's a part of YouTube that I don't think many people explore. So I need to talk to people about it, like we are now, and sell Kavos and his channel, which is still very, very well engaged, decent view channel. He's still doing most of the time 300,000 plus views with a majority like to dislike ratio by quite a distance, unless it's a particularly hot topic and people have, usually when there's a counter video made to him and the fans of the other person come over, that's when there'll be a dislike bomb, as we call it. But there is a very big fan base for Kavos.
Wow.
Very big.
Do you think YouTube needs somebody like him?
That's a really good question. I do. There's clearly a space for him because he's found it. I do think there's obviously like a police type of thing with him where is he policing people based on his own morality, his own...
That's something I found, which when I did the Ollie stuff and the calendar and Hello World... They were all things that at the time, where I was in life, they annoyed me. I believed everything I said. But the reason why, Brian said this to me on a podcast and it stuck with me. He said that after that calendar, I could have gone on to be one of, if not the biggest commentary YouTuber in the country.
Yeah.
Because I could have just called people out and people would have wanted to hear what I said. Mm-hmm. And I could have put comedy into it. But I found I didn't care enough about... I always say this, but the James Charles thing when he did the thing in the restaurant and the makeup brand, and that was probably overpriced. People ask me, why did I not do a video? Because I don't care.
Yeah.
And
do you think people need to care, though? I can't imagine Keemstar actually cares about the shit
Keemstar
he's going
reports
on, about.
On the news, right?
Apparently.
And he's meant to stay not biased, right? But so which is a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
But with me, and it was like, I know I could pull out a million banger if I talk about this, if I talk about that. But the truth is, I can say this from a point of view of somebody who was in those shoes and used to be a commentary channel, that I don't know how Kavos has enough passion to call out everybody on each individual thing. It's like, he might think Ellen DeGeneres is a bitch, then by all means do a video, do an expose video. But then the next week he's cussing up Alex for something he said on a podcast. Then it's Brian for a text message, and it's all these different people, and that drained the life out of me having to do that. And I'm just now questioning the motive behind why he's doing it, because I know for a fact that I had ill intentions when I did do them things.
He genuinely cares. He genuinely
What does he care
cares.
For, though?
I think... yeah, but that's like saying, why do people like YouTube drama? There is an audience for it. It exists. People care about what's happening in the lives, and it dates back, you know, years of celebrities, and YouTubers are certainly the new celebrity for me anyway.
Yeah.
And that's always had an audience, and behind that audience, you have to have the person that's producing the news. Mm. Now, I can't... Kavos and Keemstar have a strained relationship, verging towards the positive. I don't like Keemstar. I think he displays news as his opinion, he passes it off, and then he pushes his narrative.
Yeah.
I think Kavos has found the balance very nicely between fact, here's my opinion, and he will differentiate between the two, and I think that's probably where the difference lies between the two of them.
Yeah.
I certainly think Keemstar will play out for drama. We know, we've all seen his tweets, he plays into the drama.
Mm.
But yeah, I think, and I certainly, definitely, if I disagreed with what Kavos said to a huge extent, I would call him up on it.
Yeah.
And I would say, no, I don't think that's right. I don't think this is right. And this is what you should do. Mm. Whether or not he listens to me is a different story.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't allow, you know, I certainly, if he did anything that was homophobic or racist, not that I don't think he would.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would call him up on that. There's a line.
I do think you hit the nail on the head there with the difference between Kavos and Keemstar. And I would much rather watch Kavos than I would Keemstar. Yeah. It's a good, you've made some good points. And I take them on board. The only reason, again, I'm sure he will listen to this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I owe nothing to that boy. But I'm just saying, I question the motives because I feel like that was once me, and I sit here and often question my own.
Yeah, well, the strange thing behind any channel like that, how yours used to be and how Kavos's is now, is when I'm looking at it as someone who does not give a shit about YouTube, I don't really know much about YouTube.
Mm.
I look at it as someone who quite clearly puts himself on a pedestal above the people they're talking about. Like, you definitely did.
Yeah.
Like you looked at your morality as better than Zoella's because she'd sell a £50 calendar to kids who would buy anything she has.
Mm.
So when you're slagging someone off, what you're really saying is, I'm better than you. And that's where my thing comes in. It's all right to think you're better than someone else as long as you've got a reason. Like, we just did a whole podcast about psychics and mediums, and we quite clearly viewed ourselves as better in morality than them.
Well,
but I think you need to back it up.
You make a really good point, you do, and I know what you mean, but I would argue that I never did think I was better than her. As a person.
No, I mean a specific situation.
But
you wouldn't do that exact thing she's done.
I would have been a better YouTuber for my audience.
Yeah.
I would have offered more to an audience than she did.
Yeah, as anyone should for what that was. But like that, all of these types of videos, the type Alex did and Will and A, all of them who did any form of commentary, the second you're commenting on another person in a negative light, you need to question yourself as well, because you are viewing yourself as better than this specific situation.
As soon as you call people out, and I'm sure I will again. I'm glad you said I'm not a commentary channel, because I can do all my commentary on here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd much prefer to be a comedian than I would a commentator. But that's not saying that I won't ever not call anyone out again.
Course.
I feel if something affects me, then I'll be first on it.
Which is fair enough.
Like, a thing that I just want to address quickly now is, somebody said, oh, Brian, True Geordie's hoodies come out. It's just a logo on a £35 hoodie. Why have you not called it out? Well, my answer to that is for the same reason that I haven't called anyone out in the past 3 or 4 years, or whenever it was, 2 years. People probably find the dates and trip me up. But you know what I mean? For a prolonged period of time. Like, I'm Alex's hoodies. I think they're shit. I think they're shit.
And you don't have to like it.
I think they're problematic, but I don't need to. I'm not bothered about. I'm not bothered about Ollie White's hoodies anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not bothered.
Yeah.
I'll tell you now. If he makes another hoodie tomorrow, I won't make a video on it. You can bet your bottom dollar I'll make jokes about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I will not make that.
But then again, it was even with Ollie White's. It was a morality thing.
It was.
You've put a shitty logo, just an Ollie on a thing, and sold them for like £40.
Yeah.
Which is mental.
But moving back onto you, Christian, I think you did a really good job of defending somebody who's on your roster who's problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good trait to have in a talent manager, because it.
Yeah, I would say I don't think I'm defending him as such.
Of course,
I believe in the points that I'm putting across.
Oh, for sure, sure. And to say defending was probably the wrong word, because that seems like I'm attacking him. But I'm just questioning the whole motive behind it. But that's enough of Kavos now. I want to know a bit more about the management side of things. And you were kind enough to hit me with a few points that you'd like to talk about as well. And one of those points were MCNs. Mm. Now, I know what an MCN is. Mm-hmm. Do you, Stevie?
No idea.
Perfect. So maybe you can explain to Stevie and in turn the listeners to what an MCN is, because they're quite a strange breed.
Yeah. Okay. So MCN stands for multi-channel network.
Okay.
So it's a number of channels that have been brought together by one brand.
Mm. Yeah.
And essentially in like 2013, 2014, almost everyone was signed to an MCN, because their selling point was their main selling point was that we will use your numbers and everyone else's numbers that we have to get you a premium line of advertisement that will see your CPM rise.
Mm.
That was their selling point.
So, sorry just to butt in, but you know, like how Happy Hour, we're signed to Stakhanov, yeah?
Yeah.
So we probably get better ads because we're connected to the Football Ramble.
Yeah, of course.
So that's what YouTube channels used to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And they offered channels money as well to sign, but then in return they took a percentage of the channel.
Yeah.
So in reality that was really like a loan, but it wasn't packaged that way. It was, we will pay you X amount, but then we want up to and more than, I've seen, 25% of your channel. So all the revenue from every month would go to the umbrella company, so the top company, and then they would pay the YouTuber rather than the money going directly to the YouTuber. That caused a whole lot of problems in 2016, 17, 18, when some of them started going bankrupt and YouTubers hadn't been paid for 60 to 90 days or maybe even just 30 days, and they went bankrupt, so they never saw, you know, up to 90 days worth of revenue. How they went bankrupt is a completely different story, because their model was essentially invest and get your money back. Too many bad investments, so too many channels that then decided, actually, this YouTube thing's not for me.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they sacked it off, and too little follow up on their contracts. But they still exist today.
Do they?
They still exist.
Because I used to get daily people email me, go, join this MCN, join this, and I never did. Yeah. I've always been with AdSense direct, like, and I even had some big YouTubers saying go to this one. You had Channel Flip, like, or all of these. You had 88 something. There was loads. Like, you couldn't name them if we were here all day.
Yeah.
What the hell are they still doing now in 2020? What do they offer now?
Okay, so a controversial opinion, and there's definitely some that aren't doing this, but a lot of them are on 12-month rolling contracts that just haven't been picked up. So if you're a YouTuber on an MCN and you're paying X percentage to that MCN, what are they doing for you? Are they providing you a better quality? Because the last three people that I've got out of contracts who don't even work for me, their CPM went up by a pound each. So not only were they taking up to 25% of their revenue then went up. So
wow.
They were earning, you know, like 30, 40% more than what they would. So basically laziness from a lot of YouTubers who have these contracts and haven't gone through them, but also naivety.
Mm.
I've said to you before about, you know, YouTubers often come out of school straight into YouTube. They're much like footballers in that some very rarely experience real life. So these contracts, they were something that they signed when they were much younger. They didn't really know the repercussions of what they were signing, and certainly the longer term, because all of the MCN contracts that I've read have a 12-month rolling contract in it. So if you don't sign it, they don't come to you after 12 months, but that contract will then roll over same as it was.
Wow. What, for another 12?
For another 12 months.
Fucking
yeah.
Hell.
So at the moment, a lot, and not all, because there are some that are still doing the premium ads, are just taking money from YouTubers.
Wow.
And my advice to YouTubers would be, get somebody professionally to check the contract. Look for any break clauses. Why are they still charging you? Just ask. Because one person that I asked, they said they were pretty happy with what they were doing, their MCN. They felt like they were in good contact, and they very rarely, but they provided brand work, which is another benefit. That some of them do pass on brand work, but they weren't happy with their percentage. So I said, just go and talk to them like person to person. They were on 25%. The company dropped to zero without blinking.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Zero?
Zero. They just went, right, okay, we'll take your percentage down. Basically, they were looking to keep her numbers so they could say to brands that we have this network.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was their selling point. But they went from 25% to 0%.
Madness.
And they could have, if they wanted to, kept her in a contract for another 9 months at 25%, because legally, that's what she was in. But
so some of them are okay?
Oh, most of the time.
Right.
Most of the time they go, okay, yeah, we'll talk about it, and they'll either let you out or talk to you or offer guarantees. And that's what I want people to do.
Yeah.
Like your phone contract. When your phone contract comes up, you're down the phone shop and you're buying a new phone and you're on a new contract. With this one, take the time, review it. And then when it comes up for renewal, do what you would do. You know, go and check your O2, who might be a talent manager.
Yeah.
Go and check your. But we and the majority of people that I work with don't charge a percentage. It's my privilege to represent my talent.
Yeah.
Because they are paying my wage.
Right.
So I will never charge a percentage of somebody's channel ever.
Yeah.
And yet I will still give almost the same level of help that other people were getting.
Yeah.
Because I believe in the people that I'm representing, and I believe in their channels.
Yeah.
So
what does Colossal offer above another management company? If there was you and another like a run of the mill company, mm-hmm. why should I sign for Colossal?
We will work on 0%. So if you have pre-existing brand deals with. I'm not going to name brands, but just say XYZ.
Yeah.
You come to me, you tell me that you've got those pre-existing brand deals, and I will work for the life of your contract at 0% with them, because I do not have a relationship with them. You've formed the relationship with them. It's not my game to come in and then take your... There's too much in the value of an email.
Yeah.
So a lot of some fly-by-night talent management agencies will come in and take your email, and they won't pitch the brands, but your emails, you'll get flooded with 50 emails a year from potential brands. A lot of them turn out to be rubbish, but the talent manager just wants that email. They just want the email address, because then they don't have to do the work, and then they can scale together.
Wow.
Say if you're managing like 6 or 7 or 8 different members of talent, you're getting 6 or 7 or 8 different revenues. So you can go, actually, do you know we've got this talent as well? And of course I do that. Of course I do it. But I pitch like probably 40 to 50% of my time is spent pitching to brands.
Really?
And I don't think any other talent agent that I've worked with the exception of a couple, will do that. It will just be a case of managing emails.
What does a pitch involve?
Oh, wow. So it could be in a room like this, and you go and you talk, and it's often done on PowerPoint, so a bit of a PowerPoint wanker sitting there with a laser. No, I don't have a laser.
Long stick.
And just go through and talk about the numbers, the engagement, why they're right for the audience. So I don't know when, probably not a good idea to mention the person that's just been in. Somebody was just in, and we pitched them recently for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about their numbers, why his audience would be interested, because he's London-based and he's got a London-orientated audience, high engagement, and people are interested in what he has to say.
Right.
And so he was the perfect person to pitch.
Mm.
He doesn't have the negative connotations of a fan channel.
Yeah.
And we try to avoid them where possible, apart from people that I track and I know are quite safe. Not safe, but not like Arsenal Fan TV, essentially.
Yeah, you're not a fan.
I love Robbie.
Right.
Robbie is fantastic, and I will back Robbie to the hills. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I think that some of the people that are on there are there for the very reason that we know that they're there.
Yeah.
To be controversial.
Well, they don't get paid, do they?
They don't get paid, but they do drive an audience, and they do get paid off of that audience.
How though? Like how is who's the old guy that just got fired?
Claude.
How's he getting paid? He doesn't have a channel.
Well, he has a Twitter account, or he did, or he has various other platforms. I don't think Claude's in it for the money as such.
Right.
But you know, like DT and well, Troops.
I could be. Just I'm hearing this and going, I've got a Twitter account. I've got an Instagram. Where do I get this money?
I get your contract.
There we go.
And but I'm just naming them because they're the most common examples that people will know. DT and Troops have huge audiences, have huge YouTube accounts. They get brand deals. So they've just become like Robbie, like Arsenal Fan TV.
Yeah.
Arsenal Fan TV do brand deals. They do brand deals on their own channel. So yeah, they don't get paid to turn up.
Yeah.
But they subsequently get opportunities and get paid off the back of it.
Right. Fair enough. You're very good at like selling like an influencer. Mm-hmm. Like that. So I think a little game would just come up. With why don't we pretend I'm gonna put you under now, put you under. If it's shit, we'll cut it out. But I'm gonna pretend that Christian's just signed you, Stevie White.
That means he needs to know anything about me.
No, he knows enough about you from the podcast. And say you came into you've now walked into this room,
yeah.
and you're trying to get a brand deal,
yeah.
for Stevie White.
Popcorn.
They already follow me on Twitter. Yeah. So.
What would you say about Stevie and what and how would you try and sell it?
I would sell Stevie as a person. Very personable, very confident.
Mm.
He has a very, very engaged audience.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people follow you, Jack.
Yeah.
But then if they're big fans of you or they're fans of Stevie, they then go to Stevie. So it's
mainly fans.
Mostly the dedicated fans that they will then go to Stevie, so he gets higher engagement
on lower
number of followers.
Yeah.
So you'll get him at a really good price because he's not, you know, like a huge creator.
I am cheap.
he's a micro influencer, so he works to a certain level, and they always have really good engagement. So we'll be doing hyper targeted campaigns for Popcorn or any other Butterkist or any other
popcorn brand.
I reckon we should give Christian a week to see if he can get you a popcorn brand deal.
I'll take it.
I bet you will.
You get a popcorn, I'll be straight
all right,
in
how
there.
How about if Christian can get you a popcorn brand deal, you go 50-50?
Gladly.
Oh, there we go. I was actually quite impressed at how much you could waffle on about Stevie.
I was impressed.
I am a YouTube fan first.
Right.
So the people that I work with, I will vet them and I will watch their content and I almost to a... far too involved level, so I can probably I know more about your content than you, I would say, probably.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're clueless with what you do, though.
So. Yeah. In what respect?
I'm a fan of the content. I'm a fan of new media. I've always been a fan of new media. I love the divide between traditional media and new media, where new media are creating better content, funnier content on no budget, and just off their own back. And I think that people like you, Stephen Trice, Chi with a C, could write a sitcom and have it on a platform and people will love it.
Wow.
I want my goal one day is to get somebody a sitcom.
Yeah, you can get me one, mate. I'll tell you my whole idea right now. Episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 4, all the characters.
I know you're writing
all
one.
All the subplots. I've been writing one for quite some time.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time. Doo-doom, doo-doom, doo-doom. You uploaded a video.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
About Fame MMA.
Yeah.
Now, for anyone who doesn't know what Fame MMA is, as I said at the start of the show, it was almost like, I'm sure Christian was better equipped to sell it than not sell it, but tell you what it is than I am. But the way I understand is the YouTube boxing did quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a company called Fame MMA who got famous people and influencers to fight in the octagon against each other and sell tickets. Pretty simple model. Got a lot of backlash, didn't it?
Yeah.
Let's take us right back to the start. So... Fame, how did your involvement come? Who are they and then how did you get involved in it?
Okay, so Fame MMA Poland are huge.
Okay.
So they're bigger. than the UFC in Poland. So they do more pay-per-view buys than the UFC in Poland. Their model is gigantic in Poland. There was a mistake where they thought that they could transition over to the UK market, making very little changes, and use that name as the power to then sell 10,000 seats at the Utilita Arena in Newcastle. Now, wow. If I was involved at that stage,
yeah.
Red flag, you're not doing that. There's very little link between the Polish market and the British market. You need to come over here and sell your first show to 1,500 people,
yeah.
And then build up like they did in Poland.
So I assume in Poland, they take Polish stars then?
Yes. Yeah, Polish YouTubers.
Oh, okay.
Polish, you know, Instagram stars and big stars over there. And it is huge.
Right.
It, you know, they're on their seventh or eighth show now. And they do significant numbers.
All on TV and stuff.
It's on pay-per-view.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course. Right. Yeah.
And their last show that they had an audience for, because they did one in lockdown, and I think this one might be in lockdown as well, just like many sports things, was a 10,000 sellout.
Fuck.
They did a countless number of pay-per-view buys that I don't think I can legally say, but I saw the numbers and they were gigantic. They were huge. They were a multi-million pound company.
Right. And they've come over here and they want to replicate it, yeah, with a cut and paste format.
Yeah. And that doesn't, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work when you try and push your Instagram followers to Twitter. So trying to transfer this whole audience, there is no connect. Name a Polish YouTuber.
Not a clue.
Exactly. And same for Poland with Britain. There's no synergy between the two of them.
Is there not?
So
I haven't got a very big Polish market.
I think you'll probably find that you have 2-3% that are Polish.
Really? That's quite high.
Shout out the Polish.
Jesus Christ.
But it's there is very little, and certainly working to scale at 2-3% with different audiences is not a viable business model.
Mm.
I actually came to get involved via somebody that wasn't even involved in Fame. So I was actually third tier. The person that I got involved with was somebody who I worked with before, who is a representative of a couple of MMA fighters.
Right, okay.
But he had no association with Fame. He had the same amount of association of Fame as I did.
Yeah.
While I was working with him.
Right, okay. And your job was, at least at the start, what was to get
influencers. So basically, I will do the YouTube Instagram market, and he was doing the reality TV music entertainment market.
Right, okay. And obviously, we said you asked me, you asked Will, a whole array of people.
Yeah, about 200.
Fucking hell!
So you're not special.
Yeah,
just so you know.
And who did you get?
So about 95% of people said no.
Yeah.
Some people said yes, and they wanted more information. So I would never, ever, ever, and I don't think you would say this, wouldn't force it on anyone.
Mm.
So it was a case of, are you interested? Why are you interested? Let's talk about it, rather than, okay, sign here.
Mm.
And then we got down to about 15 people that would have gone in the octagon. So we ended up signing 6 because that was all that would allow. Some of the other people that we were going to sign were Simon Miller, who's a big guy, a huge wrestler, bodybuilding, huge guy. No one was going to fight against him.
Yeah.
So we had to narrow it down.
Right. Okay.
So we ended up signing Ali Law.
Yeah.
Ashley Marie, who was an old school Minecraft YouTuber.
Right.
Casey Barker.
Yeah.
Callum Markey.
Yeah.
Andrew Henderson.
Right.
And JMX.
So some big names on there.
And we also had Nightscape, but he withdrew due to injury.
Right. So some very decent 7.
Yeah.
Can sell tickets.
Yeah.
For sure. And how come Kavos wasn't in that list?
Couldn't find him anyone to fight against. He wanted to sign, but he wasn't willing to fight against somebody that he didn't have a reason to fight against.
Right, okay.
So we couldn't match him up with anyone, basically.
So he would have fought me?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
For what reason?
I don't know. A lot of people don't know this about him, but he is quite into fitness.
Right.
You know, he's pretty built and yeah, he's quite tall.
Yeah.
So it's...
Who's your money on then if I fought him? Oh, here we
Kavos.
Go.
Yeah. Mine's on Kavos and I don't even know what he looks like.
Yeah, well, luckily I'm not going to fight him. So that's good. That's good. Right. And so you book him, and the first steps is the press conference.
Yeah.
First media.
Yeah. So in October, the first press conference happened. Barely anyone showed up. It was free to go to, and it was free to watch. Now, the numbers on the watch were reasonable, not spectacular. The Polish team knew at that point that it wasn't going to do what they were expecting to do.
What were they expecting? Do you know?
Yeah, they were expecting in some sort of circumstance to replicate what they were doing in Poland.
Mm.
And as I said, that was never, ever viable. First of all, Newcastle, 14th of December, so 11 days before Christmas, in Newcastle, in the most northerly part of the country.
Why was it chosen? Why was there?
Exactly. No one knows.
Who was on the cards for the press conference? Like, what were people going to see?
Basically, every fighter almost turned up. So on top of the guys that I had, you had like Harvey from So Solid Crew. You had your friend, Dapper Laughs.
yeah, they fought each other.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Who won that?
Harvey.
Harvey, definitely. Dapper's like a dad now and everything that comes with that.
He trained hard.
Did he?
He trained hard, yeah.
Did he?
Yeah,
fair play to him.
Sam Gowland and Marty McKenna, who...
Geordie Shaw. So you'd think they'd do well.
One of the reasons that they were in Newcastle. And the main event was supposed to be Scotty T. Against Bear, who... is
right.
He went love X on the beach.
Yeah,
kind
yeah,
of guy.
Yeah.
Went up Big Brother, didn't he?
Yeah. He won it, I think.
And Charlie Sloth hosted.
I didn't see that one coming. I don't know where that one come from.
So some of the names are fairly big. You'd expect them to pull in an audience.
Yeah, they also didn't have the blockbuster, so they were expecting to pitch Scotty T versus Bear as the blockbuster, the KSI against Joe Weller.
Mm.
But we know that YouTube sells and can sell out arenas.
Should have got two big YouTubers.
That's what they should have done. They should have put their money into two big YouTubers, but they were far too reserved with the contracts. If they wanted to make a real success out of it, then they should have gone probably harder, but they should have done it differently. Mm. Should have been in London or Manchester. The people on the undercard should have had real issues with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point we were looking at putting up Callum Markey against, I can't remember his name, the guy that did the Yeezy stuff.
Oh yeah, I remember him. Yeah. He just did a video with Cam Kirkham.
Yes, he has, yeah. Cam Kirkham offered him out because he's built now. We were also looking at doing like Cam against Lewis Buchan,
yeah,
and a couple of others. We had a perfectly great card which had to be cut down. We probably, as I said in my video, we probably changed the card, the official card that we confirmed, we probably changed that card 40 times.
Wow.
There's a lot of YouTubers in there that I've heard of.
Yeah.
So if I've heard of them, then I assume they'd pull in an all right audience.
Me and Kavos would have sold some tickets.
Yeah, you would have.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have.
Yeah. I should have thought about that.
Actually, why didn't you?
You could have saved the whole event. This is your fault.
I'm not bothered about the event. I'm bothered about my pockets, mate.
You would have only got 70%. It's fine.
Yeah, true.
So the press conference comes. I watched a bit of it on the stream because obviously I had the chance to be involved. So my interest was piqued.
Mm-hmm.
When I say naff, I mean in terms of just like the fighters weren't really up to, they didn't know how to like banter each other, which is not any, it's not the event's fault yet.
No.
Not the event's
fault. I remember the,
it was dead.
What are they, Geordie Shaw people, mm-hmm. their little argument. I remember that going viral on Twitter because it was a bit cringy.
Yeah, it was.
Would be the word I'd use.
Yeah. Were you there in the room?
Not at the first press conference. The first press conference was in Newcastle.
Right.
So it would have taken me 8 hours to get there, 8 hours to get back.
And it was, but you know, it was to an empty room, really.
Basically, it was half capacity, the room, and the room wasn't even that big.
Right.
So it was like...
alarm bells already.
Yeah, certainly for me, and I definitely then went on to question, and I was told that everything was all right, and that it was just a minor thing, and that it would go on and progress. I probably, at certain points, could have red flagged it myself.
Yeah.
And I certainly did, to a certain extent. I certainly went that, you know, there's various different issues that are coming up here.
Yeah.
But as I said in my video, every sane and logical decision I was making was being overruled by people over my head, the directors, the shareholders, the people, and they weren't telling me. They were feeding me a false narrative. So what I was then presenting was my truth, the truth that I knew and the truth that I was being told.
Mm.
And that's why I got pushback from it, because a lot of people then thought I was the guy.
Yeah, yeah. So because you had the, you sent these influencers there, you put them, did you sort their contracts?
Yes.
So does it work? And obviously I don't need to know the minor details, it's not the place, but Fame MMA would offer you a fee.
No.
Okay, so how does because you were getting paid and then you had to pay the influencers, is that right?
No, I actually, because I didn't want there to be anything untoward, I said you take the money and I'll invoice you, so I don't touch the money.
Right. Okay, and you were just working on a percentage base.
Yes. So
right.
I would agree their fee.
Yeah.
And then I would negotiate my fee on top.
Right.
But I would always look to start at between 15 and 20%, which mm-hmm. is industry standard.
Yeah.
But because a lot of them wouldn't have gotten the card otherwise, I dropped down for one person to 4%. And I averaged at about 11%. So I got a couple of people at 15. I got somebody at 8. I was playing with numbers because I wanted them to get on the card. And I was being sold a vision that this is a long-term project, that there was a second show lined up, which there still potentially could be, and there can't be because of the issues. And I actually believe, based on stuff that I've heard since, that my fighters were lucky to get 70%. I believe, and this is an opinion, that there are some people that have not been paid.
Wow.
And I'm not particularly talking about fighters, but people that did makeup
staff.
And just you know, average yeah. run-of-the-mill staff.
Which is worse, in a way.
A little bit, yeah, because you know, they spent a lot of time doing yeah. various different bits.
These creators can go and get £1,000 brand deals elsewhere. These people, yeah. that is their bread and butter. Mm-hmm. Wow. So the issue, obviously, if it isn't clear already, is that they didn't pay
some
of the creators.
50% 3 days before the event, when they were scheduled to pay it 7 working days before the event. So there was a big, like, ruckus
yeah.
in between that point where people were threatening
for them
to
4 days where
of
you're
course.
Not yeah
yeah of course yeah. yeah that was the most stressful time in my recent memory,
yeah,
and people were like, I'm going to pull out, and I had to keep the peace because ultimately at the end of the day I had to believe the words that were being told to me, and I was pushing them, getting angry, phone calls, this, that. But I had to tell the creators that, you know, I believe that you will get the money. But, of course, if it gets closer to or one day, you're not travelling to Newcastle. That's the point.
Yeah.
None of them were in Newcastle. None of them had got to Newcastle. None of my fighters had got to Newcastle and hadn't been paid.
Right.
So they had there and had been paid their 50%.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they fought. And yeah. then...
How was the event?
The event was actually really good.
Right.
The production was really... sort of top class level,
but that's more on the people employed to do it, wasn't
precisely.
It yeah, the ones who didn't get paid, they were the ones who smashed it,
yeah,
and then...
yeah, there was the event was, they made it feel like a big deal. They sold 3,000 tickets out of 10,000. It was pretty empty.
How much were tickets?
I think they varied. I think you're probably looking at a minimum 20, and I think it went up to probably... There were VIP tickets that were going for 150.
Right.
I don't know how many of them were sold.
Yeah.
I ended up giving a lot of them away.
Did you?
Yeah, under duress, which is weird. But another thing where I was saying, right, we need to invite the biggest YouTubers down to the event. I think I invited you.
Right.
I'm almost 100% sure I did.
Yeah.
I invited the Sidemen. I had to fight to get the Sidemen VIP tickets. They
were really?
Like, they need to do these tweets. They need to do these.
What?
No, I said invite them, and if they like it, they will talk about
yeah.
it. That is natural integration.
Yeah.
I'm not forcing them to post anything. Invite them. If they turn up and they like it, they'll tweet about it. Harry and Josh from the Sidemen subsequently said, fair play, fantastic, you put on a great event. They did like 10,000 likes, probably the most engagement Fame got out of that whole event.
Yeah.
And I had to fight them tooth and nail to get, you know, the biggest people in the UK ringside seats.
Wow. That's mental. I remember now, I did the True Geordie podcast that day.
Yes.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about.
Yeah. Sad times. Yeah.
Do you know about that?
Well, I watched the 20-minute video, so I know
the
other
okay.
stuff.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, but we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
So the event went well in terms of just the night.
Yeah, I mean, the tickets and the pay-per-view buys, we knew weren't weren't good.
Good. Do you know how many pay-per-view buys? Or you're not allowed
to say? But I don't think I can legally say.
Right.
It was a lot less than they were expecting, but a lot more than some people have quoted.
Right, okay.
So they brought over two Polish fighters as well to fill in the space that Scotty T and Stephen Bear would have had.
Oh, so they were the blockbuster.
So their pay-per-view was from people
in Poland.
They
got a lot of pay-per-view from Poland, which was a clever move. And also JMX was supposed to fight a Harrison twin. He's a big bodybuilder guy. Ended up fighting the Polish James Bond, Wojciech Kola, who's actually a part owner of Fame MMA Poland.
Oh.
So not really.
He won though, didn't he?
JMX did, yeah.
JMX is a really good fighter, isn't he?
JMX could go professional.
Could he?
And so could Andrew Henderson.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know whether I should say this, but I believe both of them may have been scouted.
Is Andrew Henderson the football?
Freestyler,
yeah. The freestyler. Because he beat
Mike Fox.
Mike Fox.
In seconds,
yeah. And JMX looked really good.
Mm.
JMX, he wanted to fight Logan, didn't he, after the first fight.
We had a few talks about that before it all went, you know, tits up.
Yeah.
Because, as I should probably say, the fighters were actually paid 2 months late.
Right.
Their remaining 20%. So they weren't paid until the end of February. They were supposed to be paid on the 2nd of January.
Oh, okay. So, and you got a lot of backlash personally, mm-hmm. didn't you?
Yeah.
What were the claims?
That I was the guy, that I was the person that wasn't paying. I got DMs saying, pay your fighters, like I had the money, like all of the money was running through me, and it wasn't. As I said, not a board member, not a shareholder, not a director, not a person with significant control, just a freelancer. But because I've approached 200 different people with huge audiences, the narrative is out there that I'm the guy.
Yeah,
who's pulling the strings.
I was going to say, I didn't have a clue who you were when all this was happening, but I saw a lot of tweets directed your way. And as someone just reading it, I didn't really care about the event, but I assumed you are the guy.
Yeah. So, and then this leads us on to the True Geordie podcast.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard previous to that, I'd spoke to you for a number of years, and you were kind enough to help me out with a lot of legal stuff. And so I fully trusted you.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was on the podcast and there was some not nice things being mm-hmm. said about you, basically. I mean, you can go back and watch the podcast if you want. It's mainly from Alex. I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. And 2 weeks before the podcast, no, when you offered me the fight,
mm-hmm.
I asked a few, hate this wanky term, but industry people,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, there's red flags around it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do it. I know who that is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't need to tell you now, like on here. And then there was red flags around you potentially, mm-hmm. and whether or not you knew the event was going to flop. And, mm-hmm. and I'm not suggesting for one minute that you did, but so I had that at the front of my mind. And then I've gone on the True Geordie podcast, and some of my peers are saying mm-hmm. similar things. So I'm half cut by this point as well.
Yeah.
But I'm actually thinking, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Right. And then, because we had a little bit of a falling out, didn't we?
We did.
On Christmas Day, because I didn't back you perhaps as much as I should have done for someone who knew you. So I do apologise if you feel that way. That wasn't really my intention. It was mainly that it was a point of what I started to believe it and I couldn't be arsed, really.
Yeah.
Because of my experience with other kind of management. Mm-hmm. And I think I worded it horrifically again on Christmas Day. And I was like, I've got to be careful because of James Yates, basically, my old YouTube manager who... And I just want to put on the record now, publicly, that even though that was a private conversation, I never once said to anyone privately that you are the next James Yates.
Yeah.
But what I was trying to get across is I've had such a shit experience with him that to me anyone could be James Yates.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of my best mates at one point. We were going for beers, and then the next day he's in prison. I've got a newspaper ringing up going, is he guilty?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what he's doing. Mm. So you could have well been the most guilty person ever and it wouldn't have surprised me.
Yeah.
But not because of who you are, but because of my situation. So what Alex was saying on the podcast?
Yeah, so he said that he would have got involved against Kavos, which is debatable.
He wouldn't have.
He wouldn't have.
Alex, you wouldn't have.
And that he didn't want to get involved because of the guy running the event. And then Will says, and you can tell I've watched this clip about 4,000 times, Will says, Christian Sturt. And then Alex gets my name wrong. And then he said that he didn't want to get involved because I was full of shit. Now, that podcast is going out to several hundred thousand people on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So Christmas evening, when I'm watching it and sitting there, I've had a message and I didn't really know what it was about. And then I start getting messages from people saying, you're a fraud. You need to quit the industry. Get out.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day. At Christmas night when everyone's asleep. And I'm sitting in the corner watching the podcast lonely because I love the podcast and I watch the podcast. And I was like, shit. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
But then Will said, it's nothing that we haven't spoken about behind closed doors, which is a comment that I would still love him to justify, because I'm fully aware, having worked with a number of creators who I've become friends with, I would have classed us as friends.
Yeah.
People have told me what has been said about me behind my back.
Yeah.
None of it is true.
Yeah.
None of it is true. And it is painful to me as somebody that sees themselves as so genuine and I know that's a bit egotistical, but I know how I work.
Yeah.
I will drop my percentage to zero if it benefits a creator,
right,
because they can't get on a roll. I will do that without thinking.
Yeah.
And then people turn around saying that I'm some sort of kingpin that's conning people out of money. And then just General Joe Bloggs was messaging me saying, I got death threat. I got told to kill myself several times. It was just... that really piled on me at that point. That wasn't a particularly nice time.
I do think that Alex has come under a lot of scrutiny, and rightly so, for just frivolous comments that are just put out. And I can hold my hands up and say that even being in that room on that day, whether it was the booze or not, when he said those comments, didn't even register in my mind how it would affect someone, like at all.
Yeah.
And Lawrence jumped on it quite quickly.
But this is the thing, and I mean this sincerely. I would have questioned your motives behind your back because I didn't really know who you were. I know you were kind enough to help me, but when people are saying this, I would have been like, yeah, I'm not too sure what his game is, what he does, what the company is, whatever. I think differently now, and especially after your video, and I fully believe everything you've said here today. But when I watched it back and I heard Lawrence's comment, which was defending you on the day, mate, I don't remember any of that,
of course,
because it was like such a nothing thing. So it's just like, you're talking about so many different topics, boom, 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 boom. I probably can't remember what we spoke about at the start of this podcast.
Yeah.
So when you messaged me and was like, oh, this happened, I was like, oh shit, is this a big deal? Like, what the fuck? Like, but I can see now how it would be a big deal for you.
So a few weeks before I was watching your podcast and you had said that if anyone had a problem, they should reach out to you privately and talk.
Yeah.
So I did.
Yeah.
And then I if you look at the way that you worded it now, you'd be like, shit.
Right.
You basically said I was James Hayes.
Right, okay.
And I was sitting there on Christmas Day thinking, I'm a nice guy. My whole world's crumbling around me.
Yeah.
Because an event that I had no control over.
Right.
And yeah, of course, at certain points, there were things I would have done differently in this event, but I never, ever had any malicious intent at any point. And as I said, it was the decisions that were being made above me that were causing there to be subsequent issues.
A ripple effect to you.
Yeah.
So Alex kind of apologized?
So I messaged him and I said, you're wrong. And I was pretty stern in what I said. I said to him, you need to address this now. So he goes onto his defunct second channel and he puts out a video that reaches 40,000 people.
I didn't even know he had a second channel.
Yeah. It was his podcast channel and then he switched it and then there hadn't been a video on there for a couple of months and then he put this video up. It was seen by 40,000 people.
Why were you okay with him doing that? Because it's like when somebody cusses out somebody as like a pedo on the front page of a newspaper and then the correction is on page 17 at the bottom.
I wasn't willing for my mental health to take it any further.
Yeah.
Because it was out there so I could reference it. I've saved the video. It's still live now. Alex hasn't taken it down. So I can tell people, go and watch that video. And he says that Fame MMA and Christian aren't the same person. He doesn't apologize, which I wasn't really looking for an apology. It would have been nice. You apologized and I buried it because of the reasons that you gave me that you didn't know. Lawrence said something like, I got him a great brand deal with a car company.
Yeah.
And which I had a couple of months before. He did a fantastic piece in France for the Women's World Cup where he toured France with Layla Annalee, who's a female presenter. And I got those people involved in that project.
Right.
One of my proudest projects that I'd done. And to that point, I was kind of going up and then that hit. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm at zero again.
Yeah.
And it was a it was an emotional, sad time. And I said to you, I felt like you should have defended me because of the stuff that we've done for years.
Yeah.
We've done brand deals,
yeah.
Small brand deals, yeah. Not particularly huge brand deals, but we did one with like, don't even know whether you remember, Quiff.
Right.
Quiff.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about legal issues and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
tax
yeah.
stuff and things like
You've
this.
You've definitely helped me so much behind the scenes, yeah. And my only defence, if I don't really have one, that's why I just apologise for not saying anything.
Yeah.
But it was just a case of that I just didn't realise the gravity of the situation. Yeah. I was just like, oh, it's just Alex talking shit about someone. Like, in the same way as probably when we did a podcast, there'll be hundreds of them times. Yeah. And it was just like, oh, it is what it is. Like, and yeah, and I didn't know who to believe. So yeah, I see what you mean. I see where you're coming from. But so let's go back to where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for Christian? Like, are you taking it further with Fame?
Yeah. So I've put a statutory payment demand against Fame MMA UK. Who I believe are still trying to go ahead with a second show, and it is my belief that they can't, they shouldn't.
There's no way there's creators out there or influencers who are like, yeah, well, I'll get on board with that.
Yeah. And if, you know, certainly this is going to help, which is what I want to thank you for allowing me to come on and talk about
no problem. I think it's the least we could do after not saying anything on the True Geordie one.
Don't put me in this.
Although this won't get as many listens or views as the True Geordie one. So
yeah,
this is my page 17 correction.
The statutory payment demand is for a considerable amount of money.
Mm.
I am fighting that, and the courts aren't taking financial cases at the moment because of COVID.
Mm.
And it will get back to normal. And when it does, I will go and I'll fight on behalf of the creators. Now, the creators have been paid 70%. Two of them have decided not to pay me anything because they believe that, I don't know, you'd have to talk to them.
Can't you fight that?
Yeah, of course. But
you don't have the energy now.
No, I will fight that. Certainly, there's certainly an element of me that can't comprehend how them breaking their contract, because Fame breaking their contract is any different, and why they're really pushing me to go after Fame.
Yeah.
And I'm doing this because I don't want my legacy of business, and I've been in the industry longer than Upload and longer than Goat. So I've been, well back, I was working with PR agencies on influencer marketing in 2013. And I don't want the legacy of my company to be the downfall of a company that I had nothing to do with. So I will go and fight in court to get their fees, or at the very least to get them to fold.
Yeah.
So that they can't do the damage again to people.
Mm.
But Fame MMA Poland have told me that they could have withdrawn, and they subsequently sold when they thought it was going wrong. So they reduced their liability to the point where they were no longer liable. And then they left. And they've told me that in a phone call that I've had with them. So they knew that the event, in their opinion, was going to fail. And yet, rather than pulling the plug, they sold out and left.
Wow.
Because the people from the UK side believe that they could still get it over the line, and subsequently it was a disaster.
Mm.
The actual model of Fame MMA is a great idea. It was just executed terribly. So, I'm in court. Two of my creators have paid me to 70%, which is, I wouldn't want them to pay me to 100% because they didn't receive 100%.
Yeah.
One of them's paid me to 50%, and the other one was such a small percentage that I didn't even bother chasing it up.
Wow.
Because it wasn't, but it's left me. So I was supposed to get married at the start of this year, and this is a bit of an exclusive, I guess. I was supposed to get married in April, but it was pushed back because of COVID. Now, probably slightly naively, I booked a lot of my wedding off the back of the money that I was going to get from that.
Yeah.
Which has subsequently put me in a shit position financially. Now, I am recovering because I've worked my ass off to recover. But the non-payment has been really life impacting.
Mm.
Significantly. And then on top of that, the mental struggle of people believing that I was the guy that made these decisions. That was, when I'm sitting there on Christmas Day, like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm going to have to go and get, you know, my whole 8-year legacy in this field, it's gone. It's been ripped from underneath me.
And, wow.
Yeah.
So I think you made a good move making the video about it.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure that at no point I didn't think I could get the money from fame. That's why the video came out 5 months after. Mm. It had to be in depth and structured and talk about the real issues. And I apologize to my fighters in that video. And it's still something that I maintain to this day, because without my involvement, they wouldn't be involved. Mm. I didn't make the decisions that got them to that point, but I apologize for getting them involved.
Yeah.
The logic behind all of it, that any of it being your fault, just seems a little bit mental when the only way you get money is if your creators get money.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't...
It kind of counter each other.
Yeah, like, it makes no sense. Yeah. No, how can anyone say, oh, it's your fault they're not getting paid when you're not getting paid?
Yeah.
It didn't suit the narrative for some people.
And I think it didn't help you that, although you do have a YouTube channel and a Twitter platform, like anyone does, it's smaller, and you're kind of a behind-the-scenes kind of guy. So no matter how much we'd spoken and for how long that had been, I'd only met you maybe twice.
Yeah, two or three times, yeah.
Max?
Yeah, and we've probably spoken... There were points where we were speaking every day.
Yeah, definitely. I'd always value your opinion creatively and in the business side of things. And as I said, you'd help me and even Alfie get through, like, some legal struggles. You know more about my legal struggles than most people. You know about the cease and desist letters that I've had and stuff.
But, no comment.
But see, he knows his legal shit.
Smart move.
But, yeah, that was... The only reason why I doubted you is because... The handful of times I'd met you, you were just a person on a phone. So and so, if I'm doubting you, and I like to think I'm a good judge of character, I've been proven wrong in the past as anyone has. Imagine what the general public were thinking.
Yeah, as Stevie just said.
Mm.
Yeah, I had no idea. I looked at you as a bad guy. But I knew nothing about it, and all I could see is negative comments about you. Mm. And why would I not believe random?
Precisely.
Like, it's just drama that I've just read. It's like if Keemstar uploads a video, you're going to believe what he says, regardless of it.
Well, not Keemstar. anyone but Keemstar.
No, but like, because I know nothing about the YouTube world. If I don't do research, I will believe what he's just said in his video, because he looks like he's done the research.
Mm. It's industry people as well that were doing it, and so.
Yeah, so that's how I saw it. I saw it through previous podcast guests who I follow. And then I was like, oh, fucking hell, what is all this?
I think it's a shame that you're on a recovery mission, but I think you are firmly on that mission.
Thank you.
And if this has gone any way to helping that, then I'll be a happier man.
Well, but, I mean, moving forward, he's going to have some big popcorn deals. So.
Yeah.
Onwards and upwards from here.
You might actually have to sign a new kind of bit of talent once I absolutely destroy Kavos.
I'm coming for you, Kavos.
Nah, Kavos is good.
Right, this has been Jack Makes Happy Hour. I've been here with my left-hand man, because you don't sit on the right, do you? Stevie White.
So, do you see how he...
Yeah.
It's comedy.
The stuff he writes.
It's comedy. And Christian Sturt, thanks for joining us, mate.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Onwards and upwards, sir. We will see you in a bit. Jack Makes Happy Hour.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.